Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. North Atlantic right whales have once again been spotted in New England's waters, with several sighted south of Nantucket. These iconic large whales are known for gathering in Cape Cod Bay each spring, but their movements have been less predictable in recent years. And the population as a whole is in dire condition. It's estimated there are just over 400 animals left, and that number is dropping, not rising. Researchers cite two major factors: very low birth rates and high rates of deaths linked to fishing and shipping. Now, a new study says female whales are the key to saving this species. Joining me now is lead author Peter Corcoran. He leads the large whale research program at the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. Peter, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much, Heather.
Before we even dive into the results of this study, there's a couple of interesting points, which is, first of all, there are two authors on this paper who are no longer with us. Is this research that has been going on for so long that two of the key people have died, or what's the story there?
Well, the paper's recent, but some of the research has been going on a very long time. You know, there's a time series of looking at how many calves have been born to southern right whales at three different places in the world, sort of off South America, South Africa, and southern Australia. And the two authors who've passed away, set up the projects in South Africa and southern Australia. And they're both British, and they were kind of sent forth to the colonies back in the early 1960s to do old-fashioned whaling research. And when whaling shut down in both countries, they moved straight into conservation research. And so Peter Best in South Africa started right whale calf counts there back in 1969, and John Bannister started them in Australia in 1976. And so one of the things that struck me is I've been working on right whales in Australia back in the early 90s, and when I started working here on North Atlantic rights, it just struck me that they weren't doing as well as southern rights were. And other people have noticed this before. And in fact, Peter Best gave a talk at a conference probably about 15 years ago now, where he made the point that, you know, southern right whales are increasing at 6 or 7% a year. And he showed how that could happen sort of with a population model. And he posed the question of, well, it's not why are southern right whales going at 6 and 7% a year. The question is, why aren't North Atlantic right whales doing the same thing? And in this paper, we actually set out to answer that. Now, Peter died just before we started pulling the data for this paper together. So Ken and Els, who are the South Africans now involved in the work, asked that we put Peter on the paper to recognise his contribution. And John, who I used to know from Australia, sort of back when I was a student, John died while the paper was in review. So it was quite bittersweet.
Let's go back to the key question, which is, what is the difference between the southern right whales, whose populations are increasing, have been recovering from commercial whaling, and North Atlantic right whales that are not?
So the first thing we did was actually test whether that was true or not and show from these calving time series that, yeah, southern rights are increasing at just under 6 to just over 7% a year for three populations. And North Atlantic rights have taken it over sort of 25 years, have actually increased it just on 2% a year. And that's different from southern rights. And then what we did was ask, well, why is that the case? And to do that, we constructed a population model and then looked at what would drive the rate of increase from that population model. And we based that model on the data that is in the paper that we had out last year showing that right whales are in decline.
And right, I was going to ask you about that. How do those two, increasing 2% versus you've now showed that they're actually in decline?
Well, because it goes back to about 1990, the numbers have gone up. So we ignored whether right whales are in decline at any point in this, but just between 1992 and 2016, what have the numbers done for all these populations? And, you know, overall, I mean, there's still more North Atlantic right whales than there were back in 1992.
And so it's kind of the long-term average versus the dips up and down.
Exactly, yeah.
So one of the key takeaways from this work is that it is female whales, adult females, that are key to the rate of growth of the population, which I have to say in some ways seems like it's just kind of logical. Did we really need research to test that? It's something you've been saying for years. So what did we get from this new work to really hammer that message home?
Yeah, well, I mean, people have been saying for 20 years that it's the adult females we need to save. You know, Hal Caswell from the Oceanographic here said it in papers 20 years ago now. The big thing that this paper does is we take, you know, direct data from the time series that we have. So we know sort of what's the annual level of mortality that North Atlantic right whales actually show. And we say, if we take the lowest mortality they've shown over the past 20 years or so, and we plug that into a model, what does that tell us about what they could have done? Because, you know, southern rights have mortalities of sort of less than 1% a year, whereas here they're more like sort of 3 to 4%. Well, when you take the best that females can do, that we know they can do because we've got the data, we can show that they should be increasing at about 4% a year. And
so,
then the question
so twice
becomes...
twice what they've actually been doing.
Exactly. Twice what they've been doing. And then we ask, well, what's driven that change? And it is in mortality. That's that drives the direction of increase. And then we ask, well, where's mortality come from? And that's where we can go back and look at what we know about what kills southern right whales as well. And, you know, we know, like lots of mammals, neonates... So babies in their first few days of life are the most likely to die. And that happens everywhere. And
they're just really vulnerable.
They're just vulnerable. And it's just, you know, bad luck. And after that, there are almost no deaths of adult right whales observed in places like Australia and South Africa. And
well, they have to die at some point.
Well, they do. But, you know, that they could live for probably at least 100 years.
Wow.
And if so, that, I mean... there've been so few of them. They only started coming back after 1935. So it's like they could be almost immortal.
Wow.
From natural mortality. But when we look here, we see a lot of human-caused mortality, and we see very little human-caused mortality in the Southern Ocean because there's not that many people there.
When you say human-caused mortality for the North Atlantic right whales around here, what are those causes of death?
Well, it's entanglement in fishing gear and being hit by vessels.
And does that particularly affect females, or is it simply that when females die, that takes an extra toll on the population because, of course, you're losing potential mothers?
It's kind of both. It affects all North Atlantic right whales, but females seem to be particularly hard hit, and that's why we see fewer females in the species here now than males.
Do we have any idea why? I mean, why would they be more likely to get entangled or to be hit?
Not a good idea, no. I mean, presumably they're just slightly more vulnerable because they're a bit closer inshore or something. I mean, at that point it becomes guesswork.
There's a government group called the Large Whale Take Reduction Team, a group basically whose job it is to try to manage the deaths of large whales, that met recently. And one of the things they were discussing was some rule changes that would make it easier for lobster fishermen to fish without... the vertical lines that go from the traps on the bottom to the buoys up at the surface, and those have been targeted as one of the main problems for these whales. Is the idea of ropeless fishing becoming a reality or something that seems like a near-term possibility? It's something that's been talked about kind of abstractly for a long time.
It's getting closer to a possibility. There's certainly some attempts to test it. People are actually out on the water trying out ropeless gear right now. So hopefully that will amount to something.
There are still live adult female whales. We're not at zero yet. And yet we have seen in the past couple of years a decline in the population. And this year, no calves. So just saying that the reason the population isn't growing is because females are dying doesn't seem to be the whole equation. North Atlantic right whale females also aren't having babies. Do we know why?
We're not entirely sure why, but we have some pretty good ideas. So one is that the cost of getting caught up in gear and fishing gear, even when the whale lives through that, is such that it can postpone a whale having a calf for more years.
And why is that?
It's just the energetic cost of the drag associated with the gear, and then there'll be
they're dragging ropes and stuff around for so long.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, there's another project going on now that's comparing the body condition of southern right whales and North Atlantic right whales using drones, photogrammetry from drones. And you know, southern right whales are chubbier than North Atlantic rights. Just and we can now put science to chubbier.
You can quantify that.
We can quantify chubbier, yeah. And it's very noticeable when you work on southern rights. They just look so much better than North Atlantic rights. So there's something going on there.
And do you think that still just comes back to entanglement, or is this a more widespread problem with the health of North Atlantic right whales?
Well, we're not seeing as bad a problem with other whales in the area as in other whale species. And, you know, and we also know that entanglement in fishing gear is something we can do something about. You know, if there is something else that's impacting it, you know, if there is something about the amount of prey that's out there or something, well, it's pretty hard for us to do a lot about that, whereas we can do something about entanglement.
So that's the nail that we have a hammer for, potentially.
Exactly. And the other point is that, you know, even if it is something related to food, well, it doesn't matter how good the food is if the whale's dead.
A dead whale is not going to eat a lot of food.
No, or have any babies.
Are you optimistic? Do you see any reason for optimism or hope about the future of North Atlantic right whales?
Well, you know, there have been fewer North Atlantic right whales than there are now. So, you know, we've been in worse situations before and things have got better. So that gives me cause for optimism. And I also see no reason to not use optimism to try, because there's no point giving up.
That's certainly not going to solve the problem.
Yeah, then we will lose. So we may as well be optimistic and we may as well accept that we should solve this. And there's certainly goodwill out there from sort of all members of the various communities wanting to solve this. So we need to work with the people who have goodwill and get somewhere.
Peter Corcoran, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.